Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Everybody, welcome again to another weekly live edition of Wall Street Unspun. I am Peter Schiff, host of the show, president of Euro Pacific Capital, and author of the book Crash Proof: How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse. And the number to call toll-free is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. And we do this show live again every Wednesday evening, 8 p.m., 5 p.m. Pacific Time, on 5.07 megahertz on shortwave, and on www.europac.net, which is my website. You know, you wouldn't know. I mean, I got my book out, Crash Proof, and here we are every day for the last several days. The Dow Jones hits another new nominal record high. People would think crash. I mean, where's the crash? I mean, we just keep going up. Well, you know, I think I even put that quote in my book of, you know, whom the gods would destroy, they first make mad. And it appears that we are on the eve of destruction because we're clearly mad. Not only because the market is going up, but again, because so few people understand exactly what is going on here. But the market continues to go up in the U.S., but it continues to lag behind what we're experiencing overseas. As many of our clients can attest, I don't know how many of you have bothered to check the values of your accounts. I know the April statements are going in the mail shortly. If you haven't looked at your accounts in a while, you might be very surprised at the numbers that you see on the statements. I mean, it's kind of amazing the speed at which stocks are going up. And again, I think it's more of anything a reflection of global inflation, global speculation, you know, more than it's any kind of, you know, legitimate bull market, global bull market. And I think there's a lot of leverage out there. A lot of people are gambling and buying stocks, and, you know, all kinds of things are going on around the world. But that being said, I mean, I still maintain a fully invested posture. I still continue to recommend that my clients not hold cash, but be fully invested, because I think the risk of being in currencies is greater than the risk of being in stocks. Even though I'm fully prepared for stocks to fall, and fall by a significant amount, even the stocks that we're buying. Although, you know, my clients might not notice the decline if it comes simultaneously with a decline of the dollar, which is what I fully expect to happen. But I also understand the risks of global inflation and not wanting to just have cash. But I guess, you know, one of the good things about my position is at least I don't have to listen to any of the, you know, the negatives and the, you know, the things that the bulls would say to me. Because, you know, I'm bearish, and they want to poke fun at me for being bearish, because a typical bear would be short or would be in cash. It would be missing out on the gains. But, you know, they can't label me with that or get me for that because, you know, we're making more money being bearish than they're making being bullish. Because, you know, we're expressing our bearishness by just avoiding U.S. stocks and U.S. currency and investing abroad instead. And so at least this way, you know, we can still be bearish and be making more money. But I wonder if some of the bulls, if they, it doesn't even stop them just to consider for a while the fact that, you know, the bearish argument or the bearish case, if you express it by avoiding the U.S. and investing abroad, the fact that that case, that strategy is paying off, so well, I wonder if it makes anyone in the bullish camp kind of nervous and thinking, you know, maybe there's something to, you know, what Schiff is saying or other people who are saying similar things. But, you know, some of the news that we've been getting, too, out of the economy that I think is very interesting. And, of course, you know, you never get, you know, the true spin on it. That's why, you know, I call the show Wall Street Unspun, because I try to put, you know, take the Wall Street spin off the news. And an item of news that came out today had to do with a big surge in earnings, record earnings from MasterCard. And it had to do with a big jump in purchases on credit cards. Now, at the same day, I think we got news out of Circuit City or one of these big, you know, I mean, a very bad earnings because they're selling a lot less stuff. And we've seen a lot of retailers recently disappoint and talk about weak sales. Now, I mean, if there's a lot of weak sales, but there's a big jump in credit card payments, I mean, what is that telling you? You know, of course, Wall Street gets all excited. They say, yeah, this is great. Consumers are buying more things on credit. Well, that's nothing that I get excited about. I mean, that's more problem. That's throwing gasoline on the fire. The problem with our economy, or one of the main problems, is too much consumption, especially consumption fueled by debt. And putting things on a credit card and buying things you can't afford is nothing to celebrate. But the interesting thing, if overall sales are down, you know, or not growing, but you have a big surge in credit cards sales, what that tells me is that people are paying for things on credit cards that typically they were buying in cash. They were either writing a check or using a debit card, but now people are using credit cards to pay for things that maybe just a few months ago they didn't need the credit cards to pay for. And that's a negative as far as I'm concerned. It shows that people are stretching. People can't afford to buy things, and they're resorting to using credit cards, whereas they wouldn't have used them before. Now, also, this could be a function of the housing market. Maybe some of these purchases were being paid for by home equity loans in the past. But now that these home equity loans are harder to come about, people are having to resort to a credit card to buy things that they used to be able to charge to their house. Now, of course, when you charge it to your credit card, it's a lot more expensive to finance because the interest rates are higher, usually quite a bit higher, and, of course, there's no tax deductibility. But I look at this as a big negative. Of course, the story, I couldn't see any negative spin on this story anywhere about the consumers being so tapped out that they're, you know, they're just grasping for whatever credit they can just to make ends meet. And they're not, you know, they're probably not buying more big screen TVs. They might be just using their credit cards to buy food and to buy gasoline, whereas before they had the cash to buy those products. Anyway, let me give you out the telephone number again. I want to get some more calls going in. We've got one so far. I'll get to him in a minute. But the lines are pretty much wide open. The number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. You know, also, there are two new video appearances up on my website from last week. There is an interview I did on Neil Cavuto on real estate on Fox, and then there's the CNBC morning call, which I did. Now, last week, I told everybody that I was going to be on CNBC the following day on Thursday. And if you went to listen to me, I wasn't on because they changed the schedule, and I ended up being on Friday instead. And I didn't even know about the Cavuto on Business that I ended up doing on the Thursday instead of CNBC, because they called me Thursday morning and asked me if I would do the Cavuto on Fox. So, you know, a lot of times, I mean, I don't know about these things until the last minute, and many times the stations book you, and then they have a scheduling thing, and they cancel. So if anybody went to watch the show and then I wasn't there and they were disappointed, you know, I apologize, but you got to realize that these things change all the time. The best way to know is, and I try to put them up on the internet as soon as I know them, is go to the website, you know, and on my website, you know, in the upper right-hand corner, I mean, right now you'll see a little banner there, Going for Gold, which is the Perth Mint banner. And whenever I'm on a radio show that's coming up, I will replace that banner with an advertisement, an announcement of when I will be on a television show. So that's the best way to go. But if you miss any of these two shows, both of the shows are up on my website. And you know, one thing that's interesting, that's really interesting, and I wish I'd have thought of it when I was on the air, but you know, sometimes it's live show and everybody interrupts you and you don't necessarily get to think of everything in time. But the guy who was on there arguing the bullish case for why real estate is a good investment, it was very funny because first, he said that, you know how much real estate prices are down in the last year? The average home was only down $200. I mean, this was his statistic. So first he says that real estate prices are only down $200. And then he spends the rest of the show saying, how can you be negative when prices are down? You know, imagine a stockbroker who tells you to buy something when it's high and then sell it when it's low. He's like, real estate prices are now low, so it's a great time to buy. And, you know, so if you watch this, you'll see what he's saying. But it didn't occur to me till after the show, how can he claim on the one hand that prices are only down $200 in the last year for a house, and then on the other hand say it's a great time to buy because the prices are gone down and now they're low? I mean, how can he think a $200 drop means that prices are low? It's just, you know, he contradicted himself, yet he didn't even realize that. But anyway, it's pretty funny. And then the other show on CNBC, you know, I was very surprised. I mean, Mark Haynes was a lot nicer to me on that show, you know, because although he was being a little bit sarcastic, he goes, you know, now coming up next is my favorite guest, Peter Schiff, and, you know, although when I start talking a little bit about how eventually the market might drop, he gave me one of those looks. But at the end, it's interesting because they had an exchange, and Mark Haynes and Liz Claman talked a little bit about all the positive email they get when I'm on the show, and about the fans that I have. And then Mark Haynes said, yeah, you know, the people that write these bearish books, you know, they always sell a lot more copies than the bullish books, even though they're constantly wrong. And, you know, what, of course, I'd like to ask Mark Haynes, you know, next time I'm on the show, is what is it that I've been wrong on? Because the only investment advice I've ever given on CNBC, and the only investment advice I've ever given to any of my clients, was to stay out of U.S. stocks and U.S. bonds and U.S. currency, and instead invest in foreign bonds and foreign stocks and foreign currencies and commodities and gold. That's the only investment advice I've ever given on his show. That's the only investment advice I gave in my book. And so far as I can tell, that advice has not been wrong. That advice has been consistently right for almost the entire time I've been giving it. The lone exception was a few years during the 1990s, but anybody who took my advice in the mid to late 1990s is way ahead of the game now, despite the fact that we had a few rocky years at the beginning. As long as they stuck it out, they're doing a lot better than the people who ignored my advice in the late 1990s and who bought tech stocks, who were temporarily doing okay, but who ended up losing a lot of money. So I'd like to, if I get a chance, to ask Mark Haynes exactly what it is he thinks that I've been wrong about, because I'd be interested to know. Anyway, let me take a look and see who's up on the board. We've got a couple of callers. Let me take the first one, Dan from Florida. How you doing, Dan?
Hi, Mr. Schiff. I've just recently read your book, and I've opened an account with your company, although it actually may be a little bit premature. I just wanted to... And please forgive me, because I am a novice. I wanted to know, essentially, or approximately, how much should I be looking at, or do I need to start an account so that it is diversified enough? In your book, on Chapter 8, you know, speaking on diversification, it says that, you know, if we have between 10 and 20 stocks, it should be fairly diversified enough to even out. So, you know, I guess my main question right now is, you know, what kind of money am I looking at to need to get started?
It's you just have to take a look at your own circumstances. I mean, we don't turn down any account, so we don't have any account minimum. So we will work with you regardless of the size of your portfolio. I want to try to protect as many people as possible, and I'm not going to tell somebody that they don't have enough money to protect. But yeah, if you have a very small account, then you might have to sacrifice some diversification. But what we might do is go for the more conservative of the conservative stocks, and try to get you stocks that we feel would require the least diversification. You know, so I mean, if someone's coming in with $5,000 or $10,000 or $20,000, there's no way we're going to buy them 20 stocks. But we could buy them 3 or 4 stocks that are at least are very secure, that pay good dividends, and that are out of the dollar.
Okay.
So you know, whatever you've got, the important thing is if you have any savings, you know, for heaven's sakes, do not leave them in U.S. currency. I mean, there's no reason. I mean, you might as well spend the money now and buy the things that you want, because if you keep your dollars in a few years, you won't be able to afford those things. So, you know, put your money into other assets, or, you know, put it in, you know, precious metals, or, you know, just even a foreign money market, or just something to prepare for this. But, you know, there's really no minimum amount. But what I tell people on the phone is that, you know, we're talking about what I believe to be conservative strategies.
Right.
And so the more money that you want, you know, that you send us, the more of your wealth we can protect. You know, it's not a situation where I'm claiming to be, you know, some, you know, fantastic trader, where I'm saying, look, you know, just send me some money and I'm going to buy and sell and buy and sell and I'm going to beat the market and, you know, I'm going to make you rich. If that were my claim, you know, without any real track record, basically, you know, what you would probably do is say, look, let me send you a little bit of money, and I'll see how you do over a couple of years. And if you do as well as you claim, then I'll send you some more. You know, that would be a good way to go. But that's not my claim. I mean, the point I'm trying to make to people who read the book or potential clients is that if you've got a portfolio that consists largely of U.S. dollar-based assets, you're in trouble. And that you're going to lose a lot of your wealth if you don't do something about it to change the way that portfolio is structured. And all I'm trying to do is say, look, here's a better way to structure it. I'm not a genius when it comes to stock picking. You know, I'm not clairvoyant. I don't know, you know, the next major, you know, company. I'm just going to buy basic businesses around the world that are within a certain macroeconomic theme that we can identify. And we're going to buy these stocks, and we're going to get you good dividends, and we're going to protect your wealth. And so the more money, you know, whatever you have, I mean, you want to send us a significant portion of it because we'll protect it. I mean, if somebody is only going to send us a small percentage, then rather than taking a conservative approach, we might need to be very aggressive and try to buy things like mining stocks and things that might really, really go up a lot. Because if you only have 5 or 10% of your wealth invested in my strategy, it's really not going to help you, because you can't preserve your standard of living by conservatively investing 10% of your money abroad. You're probably going to have to aggressively invest it because you're going to have to make up for significant losses on the value of your dollar holdings. You follow me?
Right. Well, I mean, my wife and I are both nurses, and we're trying to live off of one salary and saving essentially about $2,000 a month is what we're trying to save, and probably have about $20,000 saved.
Well, I mean, it's a good start. I mean, you know, it's better than most people. But yeah, no, we can certainly help you. I mean, you can send us your $20,000. We'll do something with it, and we'll do our best to try to, you know, make monthly investments, you know, as you send in a couple of $1,000s, and hopefully you can sock away, you know, as much as possible before the bottom drops out of the dollar.
Okay. Well,
how did you hear about my book?
Oh, it was, you were on one of the shows, on one of the, you know, daily shows, and I don't know which one it was. I think it was on Fox, but I'm not sure which one it was. But, you know, they interviewed you, and they mentioned Crash Proof, and you seemed very credible. And, I mean, I've read your book, like I said, and I highly recommend it. I mean,
where'd you buy it?
Oh, where'd I buy it? My wife got it for me online. I don't know if it was through, like, Amazon or eBay or something like that.
I'm glad that the message is getting out there to...
Oh, no question.
And, you know, just hearing me on TV. Well, great. I'm really glad that you called. I'm glad to have you on board. And, thanks, everybody else at the hospital.
I spoke with one of your agents in California, I guess it is, and I don't know, after speaking to him, because also in your book it says to, I guess, put a, a good amount at first, for emergency cash into something that's very liquid. And I was, I guess I'm trying to work through if I need to do that first and then, invest in the stocks or equities.
Yeah, well, talk to the rep out in California. I'm sure he'll be able to help you come to a good decision on how to approach it.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Dan. Thanks for the call.
All right, bye now.
Great. We got a few more people on hold. Let me give out the number one more time for anybody else who wants to call. It's 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Let's take a quick commercial break, and we will be back for more phone calls.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Hello, and we are back. And a quick note on my schedule. I am going to be at the Las Vegas Money Show coming up in less than 2 weeks, May 14th, or just exactly 2 weeks, May 14th through the 17th at the Mandalay Bay. So I'll be there. I got two or three workshops. And definitely if you haven't come, I know it's last minute, but it'd be a great time to come. I'm not really sure how many more of these money shows I'm going to be doing, as I said, so it could be one of the last times to see me for a while. I mean, the main reason being is that, I go to these money shows to try to attract business. But the problem now, we're getting so much business without going anywhere, that the time it takes to fly down there, to bring the reps down there, we work the booth, it's actually, financially not necessarily worth it to us. Because we're getting so much business now just not going anywhere. So I don't necessarily need the exposure. But it's always, if you want to meet in person and see these bull bear debates, it's going to be a real interesting one this time, I can promise you, when I start to throw some of this stuff back at Louis Navalier and Joe Battipaglia. And we have the client-only conferences, which we do every one of these money shows. So it'd be a good, a good time to come down. I'm also going to be back in Vegas again in July. So if you miss me at the money show in May, you can come to Freedom Fest July 4th to July 7th. I'm not sure what the hotel is there, there's a link to it on my website. But it's Freedom Fest. That'll be a great weekend. Unfortunately, it's in July. It'll be kind of hot. I'm just trying to make sure I'm still on the air here. I don't know. I had some kind of weird sound. Oh, okay. Anyway, I think it was somebody calling in on the phone. But so check the website under scheduled appearances. You can go to the link to Freedom Fest. I think we're also sending out a mass email on the Freedom Fest, letting everybody know who's involved, who's going to speak, and how to sign up to go to a Freedom Fest in Las Vegas over 4th of July. I know not the best time to be in Vegas, but I guess they were trying to be patriotic, and do it on July 4th because it's a lot of patriotic, freedom-loving people who will be there, myself included. Anyway, let's go back to the phone lines. Paul is on the line from California. Go ahead, Paul.
I have a question for you, Peter.
Yes.
If you had your choice between, say, for instance, a domestic coal company or a foreign coal company, which one would you take? I'm a big fan of coal.
Well, I mean, in general, you know, it'd be foreign. I mean, you know, I mean, we're buying another Australian coal company right now to make up for the other Australian coal company that was in the process of being bought out. We do have some Canadian coal companies, but all things being equal, I usually prefer a foreign stock to a domestic stock. Generally speaking, you can buy them cheaper. So if there's a foreign company doing the same thing as a domestic company, normally it's going to be at a lower PE and give you a higher yield.
Well, you know, there's this phenomenon that occurs every May. You know, it's the sell in May, then go away. And do you think there's going to be some kind of a takedown of the gold and, you know, energy markets like there was last year? It would be the perfect opportunity if I was going to do such a thing.
I don't know. I mean, maybe. I mean, you know, I mean, I think these, you know, sometimes selling in May is the right thing to do, and sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
And then the thing is selling in May and buying what? I certainly wouldn't want to sell in May and buy dollars, so it just depends on where you're going to be.
Now, the risk is that much in dollars, huh?
I think that's where the risk is, but, like, I don't know. I mean, I've just continued to maintain a, you know, hold assets over cash, but buy conservative assets with good dividends so that we can ride out any downturn.
So you take the dividends over the, say, for instance, the appreciation of a stock. Like, for instance, the coal company I'm looking at, it starts with a P, and it seems like it's selling for half the price it should be selling, but there's other ones that are in, like, Canada or other places like that. They seem like they might be cheaper, or are they going to get as much run-up as the one that maybe the domestic coal company?
Oh, look, I don't know. I mean, you can buy domestic stocks. I mean, I own a few. I mean, you know, the only U.S. stocks that I, you know, would consider buying or have bought are in the mining and natural resource industries and, you know, are very much export-oriented, selling in the global market. And so, sometimes I buy U.S. stocks. But in general, I find that I get better values abroad, and I am, you know, more afraid of a bear market in the U.S., and I'm also afraid of confiscatory levels of taxation being imposed by the U.S. government on the companies that manage to have good profits in an economic downturn.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. The new taxes that they probably want to institute on especially energy companies, you know.
So, like, you know, if we're in a big recession and things are really bad and there's a handful of companies that are making money, you know the American politicians are going to say, you know, this is terrible. How dare they profit while we're all suffering? Those profits should be confiscated for the good of the people. You know, and so let's levy a windfall profit tax on the oil companies, on the coal companies, on the gold companies, on anybody who's making any money. You know, and let's take it away from them because we need to divvy it up among you poor folks. And of course, the poor aren't going to get any money. It's just going to go to support the government.
Well, one thing I do like, I am a client, and I definitely do like the dividends that some of these companies pay. It's quite unbelievable. That's what I really like. You know, the unit trusts.
Yeah, there's one of those that's a coal company too that we've been buying. I think it's turned around. It had a big pullback and got a great yield, and I think it's a great time to buy it. You know, it was up strongly again today. But anybody interested in any of these, you know, Canadian trusts or any of these yield-oriented natural resource stocks, and they want to really discuss them, you know, just call up the office, and we got brokers that are working right now out in California, probably in Phoenix. There might even be some in Connecticut, but you can give them a call and talk about these stocks.
Well, hey, well, thanks a lot. I'll have to take a...
Thanks for your call, Paul. Let's take another call from California. Is Jeff there?
Yeah, I'm here, Peter.
Hey, Jeff.
Hi. Peter, I'm a small client now, very small, but I'd like to be a bigger client.
Well, we'd like to help you.
Well, here's my situation. I don't know if this is a fair question to ask you, but I was approved for a home equity line some time ago, and the money's just been sitting there. And I have...
Well, it's not sitting there. You just haven't... You mean you haven't borrowed it yet?
I haven't borrowed it yet, correct.
Right. So you have a line.
Mm-hmm. I have a line open, correct. And right now I have about $100,000 there. So I don't want
to... Should you borrow that money and send it into us to invest?
Yeah, how'd you know that's what I was going to ask?
Yeah, well, it's obvious. And, you know, it's a tough call, right? Because you're going to borrow money and then you're going to invest it. Now, I would... Under no circumstances would I encourage somebody to borrow money and gamble with it. And so you shouldn't borrow money to buy a stock that you think is going to go up. But if you're going to borrow to invest, sometimes it makes sense. And the difference between investing and speculating, in my mind, is investments throw off a return, whether it's rents on property, interest on bonds, or dividends on stocks. So if you can find an investment that will pay you more than the cost of borrowing, like if you can borrow money to buy rental property and then collect rents, and the rents will give you a reasonable return beyond the cost of borrowing the money, then maybe it makes sense to go into debt to buy rental property. The same thing would be said for stocks. Should you borrow money against your house and then use it to buy a portfolio of foreign stocks? Now, if the yield on those stocks is greater than what it's going to cost you to borrow money, and you can have a positive carry, then that could be a good use of borrowed money. I mean, I certainly think it makes more sense to borrow money to acquire income-producing assets, for example, than to borrow money to remodel your kitchen or to buy a car or a big-screen TV.
Right, I understand.
Because those things are going to have zero return, and they're going to depreciate over time, so
right.
You have to work a lot harder. But the risk that you make, of course, when you borrow to invest is that the investments go south, and now you've lost money. You know, of course, when you buy something, you lose money for sure, but you do get the enjoyment out of your granite countertops or your Viking stove or your big screen TV. You don't necessarily get enjoyment by having a brokerage account with me. A lot of clients seem to enjoy it, but you know, if the stocks are going down, you might not find it that pleasurable. But you got to decide, you know, for yourself, do you want to take the risk of borrowing money and buying an asset and having the asset fall in value, and then when you sell it, you don't have enough money to repay the entirety of the loan. Now, at least if you're getting good dividends, you will be able to cover the interest. But the main reason that I even throw this out there as an option is because I personally think the dollar is going to collapse. And so if you borrow, let's say, $100,000 and buy some foreign assets with me, and if I'm right and the dollar does collapse, that $100,000 worth of assets could be $500,000 or $1 million, in which case you can pay off that loan with a couple of years' dividends. So if I'm right, then obviously the answer to the question is you should do it. But there's no guarantee that I'm right, and you have to understand that if I'm wrong, you could be throwing some money away. So this is, you got to just decide what you want to do, and then you can talk to one of the brokers at Euro Pacific and decide, what portion or any portion of that you want to borrow. Part of what I would say is too is when you borrow that money, is it a variable rate or is it locked in?
I can fix it in. I have a really great credit rating, so they give me their best rate. But the best rate is 6.99. So it's basically.
How long can you fix it?
15 years.
Well, to me, that sounds like a good deal because I think inflation is going to be a lot higher than 6%, 7% for the next 15 years.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that we can construct a portfolio that would pay you, get it decently diversified and not, and still give you a yield of over 7%. So you would still get a check every month. You would get a 1%, you'd be earning 1% more than you were paying. And so you'd have basically like a free ride, I think. And then if I'm right, you hit it big. I mean, obviously if I'm wrong, then the stocks go down. But I think you have a lot more to lose. Personally, I think there's a lot more to lose if you don't do it and I'm right than if you do do it and I'm wrong. Because the stocks that we buy you, they wouldn't go to zero. I mean, maybe they'd go down 10 or 20%. I mean, I don't think it would be a complete disaster. You know what I mean?
Over a 15-year time horizon, they're probably not going to...
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously what can happen, though, is this, let's say we buy a stock and they have to cut the dividend or something goes wrong.
Right.
Your income isn't as high as we thought. Or let's say the dollar goes up instead of down. And now these the euros that we're earning or the Australian dollars that we're earning don't translate into a 7% yield anymore. Maybe the yield's only 5% because the dollar's gone up by 20%. So
mm-hmm.
Have these things. But, I think the odds of the dollar getting killed are so much greater than the odds of it rallying that I'm just going to play the odds,
Well, at 7%, I mean, you're not having stocks that are paying greater than 7%, are you?
But yeah, we are. I mean, there are stocks that are paying 9 and 10%. There are some that are paying 12 and 14%. But then there are others that are paying 3 and 4 and 5%. So we generally get a mixture. But when you blend it all up, you should be able to get about 7% on a portfolio.
Yeah, okay.
That's relatively diversified,
Okay. And don't you think, not to take a lot of your time, but don't you think the dollar's probably going to bounce when it hits that?
It's already bounced a little bit. The dollar index made a new low between the last show that we did last week and today. But in the last couple of days, it's already bounced a little bit. And I don't know how many times it's going to bounce, and maybe it'll be a significant bounce. But, you know, I think eventually it's going to fall through the floor and not stop. And so I just want to make sure that as many people are out of the dollar before that happens, because it could happen any day.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you, Peter.
Thanks for the call, Paul. Or is this Paul or Jeff? I know we had somebody. Is Jeff from California on the line, or is that Jeff?
I just wanted to ask you, is there an advantage?
This is Larry from Iowa. Okay, great. Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, sorry. I was going to ask you, I'm a little confused, you know, when you talk about foreign companies and getting out of the dollar. For example, like, say if you buy, like, a British Petroleum or an Imperial Oil or, like, a PetroChina, is there an advantage to that? Is that considered getting out of the domestic?
Yeah, I mean, British Petroleum is a British company. I mean, it has an ADR. I mean, I own British Petroleum myself. I mean, but, yeah, I mean, it's an oil-based asset. It's a foreign-based company. It's a foreign investment. I mean, it's something that's worth owning. And it's something, you know, you can buy British Petroleum pretty much anywhere because it has an actively traded ADR. In fact, I own the ADR. I don't own the ordinary shares. I bought the ADRs, and anybody can do that. I mean, mostly, you know, what I'm helping people do at Euro Pacific is buy stocks that are not easily traded on the New York Stock Exchange. They don't have ADRs, you know. One of my best performing oil stocks has an ADR. It's a stock that we've owned for a long time in Australia. And now it's about five times what we originally paid for. It just hit a new high. I think it's up about 10% in the last couple of days. But that has a relatively illiquid ADR that trades over the counter. So there, I own that myself too, but I own the ordinary shares in Australia, not the illiquid over-the-counter ADR. You know, either way, I mean, it's a foreign investment, it's a commodity-based investment, and they both pay good dividends. Now, the one I own in Australia pays a better yield than the British Petroleum, but they both pay dividends, and they're consistent with my belief that oil prices are going higher.
Well, how about like a PetroChina? What is that?
I don't own PetroChina. A number of my clients do. It's never been a stock that I've really. Necessarily kept recommending to people, but a lot of people own it through me. They bought it. It's been recommended by newsletters, and it's done very well. I mean, some of the best performing oil companies we've had. I mean, there's one particular oil stock that was recommended by a newsletter that a lot of my clients bought. I liked it. I mean, I didn't buy it for myself. I actually bought some in my mother in her pension plan. But the thing is, 10 times what we paid for it. 3 or 4 years ago, at least 10 times, maybe more. And it wasn't even my recommendation. It was recommended in the newsletter. But I can see, how much better, some of these Asian-based oil companies have done, relative to the ones in the U.S. But I think there's considerably, there's more risk. I think when you're buying a Chinese company, you're taking more risk than an Australian company. I mean, no question in my mind that there's more risk there. But people are getting rewarded because the returns have been staggering.
Now, British Petroleum seems to be down compared, to most...
I mean, look, some of these big ones that I own, in the U.S., like British Petroleum, I own Royal Dutch, which also has an ADR. That hasn't been making new highs. I mean, some of these big multinational oil companies have really not been doing much. I mean, and I think they're good buys. I think all those stocks, I even own, I think all those stocks... are still cheap on a PE basis, relative to what their earnings are.
Hey, thanks so much.
All right. But anyway, too, any of the stocks that we talk about stocks on the show, realize that I'm not actually recommending any particular stocks. We're just discussing them. Any recommendations? And before anybody buys a stock that we discuss on the show, they should talk to a broker, either a broker at another firm, even or somebody at Euro Pacific Capital, just to really get some more information on these stocks and find out what's suitable for your particular strategy and what the risks are and everything like that. It's time to take one more commercial break. I still have a few more callers on hold. I will get to those calls in a minute following the break.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro-Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back. And I know before I get to the callers, I wanted to mention, you know, a little bit of what's been going on with the gold market and the gold stocks, because it was a very interesting day today. You know, gold stocks have been very weak the past week. They have fallen maybe 7% or so, you know, from where they were, versus only about a 2% decline in the price of gold. So gold stocks have been very, very weak. Now, today we had a little bit of a different move. We had gold prices that were basically flat to lower, you know, in general on the day. But we had, you know, very strong showing in the gold stocks. And in particular, the South Africans were very strong today. And in North America, up in Canada, Barrick Gold was up about 6% on the day. They came out with their earnings, but they also announced that they have reduced their hedge book to nothing. And so Barrick is now unhedged, with the exception of some development deals that they're doing. But as far as their, you know, their main business and their future production and their current production, they have completely closed down their hedge book. And the stock was up, you know, this is the biggest up day I've seen in a stock in a long time. And I have been a buyer of Barrick. And, you know, Barrick Gold is one of these gold stocks that all the gold bugs love to hate. And as a result, I ended up buying a lot of it. I mean, I personally, Barrick Gold is my largest holding in any one gold stock. And I have a lot of gold stocks, but it's my biggest position. I bought a lot of it for clients, too. And I remember buying Barrick Gold, you know, when it was $13 and $14 and $15. So now it's time for about $30. But, you know, everybody, I remember when I was buying it, I would go up on the website and people were saying, oh, you're going to get killed, Barrick's going to go broke. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, as gold goes up, Barrick is going to lose a lot of money. But it actually turned out to be a contrarian play within a contrarian. I mean, it's certainly not the best performing gold stock that I own, but it's by far not the worst. And, you know, it's done a lot better than, let's say, Newmont, which I also own. It's done a lot better than Newmont over the last couple of years. But I don't know if that was the leader or what that was the instigator of this big rally today, the strength in Barrick Gold. But, you know, we had some huge reversals today. I mean, while I look at a stock like Kinross that, you know, intraday had a move of over a dollar. You know, it was way down and way up. Look at, I mean, SSRI, which is my largest silver position. I am back. Sorry about that. You know, I had a couple of people on hold, and apparently Jim from New York got tired of waiting. And when he hung up and I heard that message, I thought it meant that I was disconnected, and that's why I hung up to quickly redial. But the point about the gold stocks is today was a very interesting day. We had reversals in some key stocks. We had big rallies. I don't know, was it just a one-day fluke, or was it the start of something bigger? We'll have to see if there's any follow-through tomorrow, but it was certainly interesting to see some of the strength in some of these stocks, even though bullion prices really didn't do anything. And the dollar was generally higher on the day. Let's go to the sole remaining caller. I've got Steve on the line from California. Go ahead, Steve.
Question on gold today, so that was good timing. I've noticed that, first of all, I had my first investments through Europac this week, so I'm very excited and glad to be moving out of the dollar. The question on gold is, as I've noticed, that and silver are basically about the same as they were a year ago. And I'm wondering, with the falling dollar and such, why has gold sort of not moved much or at all?
Gold actually has. I mean, gold, but gold had that one big spike up to 725. And then, so if you measure it against 725, and I forget exactly when it hit that price, it pulled back. But remember, it had a big move up prior to that. So I think we're still ahead. And silver, you know, had that spike up to $15.
Right.
I think that coincided with the launching of the silver ETF or leading up to into that. And so there were these big spikes, and then we pulled back. And so when you're measuring them against those spike highs, it looks like we haven't really got anywhere. But if you really look at a line and, you know, look at it over the last few years, we're still trending higher over time. And if you price, you know, the gold versus the Dow, I don't know, it's maybe it's moved back up closer to 20 to 1. You know, it was 19 to 1 a couple days ago. I didn't really check the ratio today. But it started the year at about 20 to 1. So everybody can see, okay, yeah, the stock market's going up, but, you know, the stock market hasn't gained at all on gold, so gold has kind of been keeping pace with the market. But, yeah, I think gold should be a lot higher. Given what's going on, given all the inflation that's being created, given these dynamics, it's surprising, you know, that gold hasn't already broken out in a more significant way. I expect that it will, and I'm not discouraged at all. I'm not second-guessing my bullishness by thinking, well, gee, if it hasn't moved up yet, maybe there's something wrong. Maybe it's going to collapse. Maybe I should rethink my hypothesis here. No, I just think that it's going to take longer. I mean, sometimes, look, you know, markets hold up a lot longer than you think, or they'll stay low a lot longer than you think. I think ultimately patience will be rewarded for people who can, you know, clearly read the writing on the wall and who who are smart enough to hold out of this metal, you know, before it really just takes off.
It hasn't changed my view. I'm just wondering whether all this liquidity that supposedly there have been some comments that the liquidity, the money that was in housing is now all going to go into the stock market, and I just think there might be a really false euphoria and people not knowing where to put
money. That was housing is not going to come out of housing. You know, it's like a roach motel. It goes in, but it doesn't come out.
Someone made that comment. I think it was somebody from the Fed made such a comment that was on the web. But
maybe people that would have taken additional money and speculated by buying some properties to flip, maybe they'll take that speculative money and take it to a different casino with a stock market.
Well, that could be. I'm sort of amazed that the market just keeps moving up, but once again, it might as well ride it. I also have been. I saw you on Neil Cavuto last week and on the morning call, and I've gone through some of the archives, and no one seems to do an interview with you in depth one-on-one. You're brought up as sort of the you know, the bad guy. They keep calling you gloom and doom, and I don't think you're gloom and doom at all. I think you're nimble.
On those TV shows, you know, the CNBCs and the Bloombergs, that's their format. I mean, they don't interview anybody, you know, at length. I mean, I've been on the show by myself with one of the, you know, with the various hosts, and I've had 5, 7, 8 minutes even, which is a long time in TV world.
Oh, I haven't seen those.
Yeah, well, go back, look at some of the archives, you'll see. Look at, like, the very first show I did on Squawk Box, the first one on Squawk Box, the oldest one on the site. It's the longest interview I think I had on Squawk Box. But, you know, that's just the format of the show. They're looking for, you know, sound bites. They're looking for quick, entertaining things, and so that's what you get. But, you know, once in a while I do talk radio, and I do interviews for a lengthy period. And so we get to get into more depth, but on those
they characterize you wrong as well, because what you're offering us is an ability to be nimble, to move out of a sinking currency, but not to stop investing. You're not telling us to hide in the ground. We're going into equities somewhere else where they may be more promising or.
Oh, exactly. That's what a lot of people, when they say, oh, you know, you're doing people a disservice. You're telling them not to invest. And I have to say, no, I'm not. I'm not telling them not to invest. It's the opposite. I mean, I'm a stockbroker. Why would I tell people not to invest? But I'm just telling them not to invest in the United States when it's far better to invest abroad, that the risks in this market are too great and the risk in the dollar are too great and the rewards are better investing offshore. That's my message.
Right.
Anyway, Steve, thanks for the call. We got two more calls on hold and only
right.
left to go. Okay, so let's not take any more calls because I doubt I'll have time to get to them, but we do have two more callers on hold. So let me take Phil calling from Canada.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. I'm kind of new to this investing in the gold business, et cetera. You mentioned that Barrick has reduced its hedge book to zero. Basic question, what is a hedge book and what significance does it have to the price of gold?
Well, it's difficult to say what the significance is to the price of gold, but what a hedge book is when a company, particularly a gold mining company or anybody, is involved in a commodity-based business, very often what they do is they try to lock in a known price into the future, so they know exactly what their revenue stream is going to be. And so for a gold miner, what they might do is they might sell forward and lock into contracts to deliver gold at a certain price.
Right.
Therefore, they're protected. If the price of gold goes down in the future, they're able to deliver into this hedge contract and receive the higher price. Of course, if gold prices continue to rise, they're locked into these prices, and they have to deliver at a price that might be considerably below what the market price might be.
Right.
And that's been one of the reasons that people have avoided Barrick. Some of the people in my camp as gold bulls have not wanted Barrick because they've been worried about the negative impact of the losses that would result from a hedge book.
Right.
Well, I would have liked Barrick to have unwound that hedge book sooner. One of the reasons that I was buying Barrick, when I was, is because I thought that they were going to unwind this hedge book, and I didn't think it was going to cost as much as the market feared. And they really started doing it about a year or two after I would have hoped they would have done it. But they did successfully accomplish it. And I still think I got a good buy on the shares because I didn't think it cost them as much to unwind that book as the market was punishing them for being hedged. But for many, many years, of course, Barrick Gold benefited from its hedge because gold prices were falling for years. And because they were hedged for so many years, it enabled them to make a lot more money than they otherwise would have. And they were able to use that money to develop projects. And they have a lot of projects all around the world right now, and they have potential new discoveries in the pipeline. They might not have been able to have financed those projects had they not had that hedge book in place all those years. So it wasn't perfect. I think they could have unwound it a little bit sooner. But, as a shareholder, I'm glad that it's done, and I think, I think I bought the stock for the right reasons, and I'm glad that I own it. As I said, it's not the best performing gold stock I have by any stretch, but it's nowhere near the worst. And I think there could be a lot more upside in the stock right now. But again, these gold stocks are all speculative, and they all depend on what happens to the price of gold. They're much different. The stocks that I'm generally recommending to people at Euro Pacific, really don't depend on the price of a commodity. They depend on relatively known earning streams that are coming, from these businesses and the dividends that they're able to pay.
Right. Okay, thanks very much.
Well, thanks, Sol. Let's take the last caller, Robert from Wisconsin. Go ahead, Bob.
Hey, Peter. How you doing? I'm a mortgage planner here in Wisconsin, and all the top producers in my industry team up with an investment advisor, a stockbroker. But I'm a little hesitant on working with somebody that works for like the regular stockbrokers or advisors. If the dollar is going to be collapsing, I'm a little hesitant on working with somebody that's going to be recommending, American assets. So, what do you recommend on how to teach these people?
Well, did you read my book?
Yeah, I bought it a couple of weeks.
I would give get them to buy a copy of my book or give them a copy of my book and just have them contact us. And try to implement the strategies outlined in that book to try to invest abroad and invest in commodities and invest in things that are likely to do well during the economic times that lie ahead.
And have you ever thought about doing some podcasts to kind of like a what Robert Kiyosaki does, where he, breaks it down simply and teaches people.
People talk about doing those things or webinars or all sorts of things, and I don't know. Maybe I'll do more in the future. I know I'm very busy right now, and I'm doing what I can. But yeah, I'm sure over time we'll have more and interesting ways to communicate. But right now, I think a lot of people can listen to this show every week, and I think I get a lot accomplished through the radio show.
Right.
You're talking a little bit about the housing market. I read some great articles recently, again, about the large number of spec houses on the market that people bought with the intention of flipping, and now they can't get rid of them, so they're renting them. And they're accepting rental returns that basically don't even cover their mortgages, but they're hoping that if they just wait another year or two, they'll be able to sell into a stronger market. And so we haven't had the capitulation yet. We haven't had these people throw in the towel and realize that they're just throwing good money after bad right now, and we're not going to have a stronger market in a year or two. We're going to have an even weaker market.
Right, and just like that gentleman you were talking to from California where he was deciding whether he should pull that $100,000 out of his line of credit or out of his equity, and I mean, I would think that'd be a smart thing because equity returns 0% return, you know, and as long as he can get it into something that's, you know, like you say, paying the dividends and diversified. And
especially if the equity is going to disappear, because then at least, you know, the portfolio will still be there, even if the home equity is gone. Now, of course, you still blow the money, but, you know, but in the future, you might not have the ability to tap into the equity when the equity is no longer there. The bank won't, you know, let you borrow it if it's gone.
Right. Well, yeah, I just wanted to say thank you for the message that you're, you know, saying on CNBC, and it's a powerful message, and I'm getting a lot from you.
Thanks.
So,
thank you for the call.
All right. Have a good day.
Thank you. Well, we're kind of running the last few minutes here. I'm just up on Yahoo and noticing that book sales have slipped down. The book is all the way down to number 615. I don't know what's going on there. We need some people to get on this site and start buying the book. If you haven't bought this book, you know, I talked to a lot of clients that still haven't had a chance to read it or haven't bought it. If you haven't bought the book, really go out and do yourself a favor and buy a copy of this book. I think you're going to enjoy reading it. And more importantly, I think you can use it as a tool to help introduce your friends, your coworkers to these ideas and these themes. I mean, I think people will read the book, and it's very persuasive. And it's one of the reasons it's persuasive is because it's written in a very simple, straightforward way. And it's written in many cases in a humorous way so that people are interested in it. People are not going to necessarily put it down. So it's a great thing to have, you know, around the house to give to your friends. So if you haven't ordered it, you can go on my website and order it. You can go into a bookstore and buy it. And I'm hopefully, I don't know, no one has called me to tell me that they've done this yet, and I've encouraged it in the past, and hopefully people don't think I'm kidding, but I'm dead serious, is that I'd like people to, you know, call up radio talk shows, particularly, you know, more conservative or investment-oriented talk shows, and ask the host if he's read my book. Mention it by name and start talking about it. You know, it worked for Howard Stern. I mean, he had people calling up everybody, and I think that's what made him so popular. So, you know, I think if people who are, you know, listen to this show can also listen to other radio shows, mainstream, AM, you know, big 50,000-watt stations, call up and talk about the book, generate some buzz. You know, it could do a lot for the sales and maybe help some of your fellow Americans protect their wealth. Anyway, that's it. We are running out of time. Thanks. I will be here again the same time next week, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, www.europac.net. Call us up, 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922. Make sure and get sign up for the newsletter, Global Investor, and that's it. I will be here again next week. Thanks for listening.